This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way.
I'm Molly.
And I'm Matthew.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any.
We have a little something new for you.
You may have noticed in your Spilled Milk feed, a couple weeks ago, we released the trailer for a new podcast that we're doing.
It's called Dire Desires, Life Lessons from Classic Erotic Thrillers.
This idea came out of, believe it or not, guys, when we go on our corporate retreats, we actually, like, we do some real hard thinking. And we also...
That's my favorite. Erotic thriller, Hard Thinking.
Hard Thinking.
With Michael Douglas.
We also watch erotic thrillers at night on our corporate retreat because nothing says professionalism
exactly.
Like watching sexy movies with your coworkers.
Yeah, we make all of our numerous employees gather around the television and we put on like a Body Heat or a Body of Evidence or something with body in the title and they're forced to watch.
We decided that, you know, after having so much fun and sometimes so much
pain,
disappointment, pain watching these movies together, we decided to make a show out of it. So the cool part is it's not just me and Matthew anymore.
Oh, no.
Guys.
Producer Abby is on the mic.
She's on this side of the mic this time, guys. And she is a real movie buff. She actually has studied film, unlike me and Matthew. So she brings a whole other angle to this ridiculous new endeavor.
Yeah. Producer Abby will be like, did you notice like this running motif throughout the movie? And Molly and I will be like, no, we did not. We never, noticed a motif in our lives.
No, then we're like, what's a motif?
Exactly. This is a super fun show. It is a limited series. It is totally free, and you can get it wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Dire Desires or go to DireDesiresPodcast.com. And if you like Spilled Milk, I think there's a 99% chance you're going to enjoy Dire Desires.
So, Dire Desires. Go check it out.
It's got a lot of Molly this otherworldly voice that I think even Molly doesn't know where this voice comes from.
My own mother heard our trailer for Dire Desires and was like, who's talking? So
that's my favorite thing that's happened.
So tune in and listen to me channel a new me.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about a food. And that food is mashed potatoes. That's my Purred Happily impression, I think.
What? Who's Purred Happily?
Purred Happily is a recurring character on the sitcom Parks and Rec.
Oh, I need to watch more Parks and Rec. You know, I only started watching The Office recently, like very recently. The humor in it really agrees with me. And I hear Parks and Rec is similar.
Yeah, Parks and Rec is like The Office, but a little more gentle.
Oh, a little more gentle.
Yeah.
Oh, I like the hard thinking of The Office.
Exactly.
See, I'm using hard thinking now. I'm still
that's
not
our,
sure
that's
what
our
hard
new catchphrase,
thinking
yeah.
is.
If we start out like a comedy podcast about philosophy, let's call it hard thinking.
Okay. All right. Anyway, so today we're talking about mashed potatoes, which frankly, neither one of us is going to be eating during this episode. It's 10 a.m. and Matthew's sitting alone in his dining room.
True.
And I'm in my closet again.
Yeah, mashed potatoes is kind of soft thinking.
It is soft thinking.
It is.
Let's tiptoe softly down your mashed potato memory lane.
Okay, so I'm not a big mashed potato eater, but there are a couple of key mashed potato landmarks on my memory lane. And one is the mashed potatoes from Al Forno Restaurant in Providence, Rhode Island, which also appear in their cookbook, Cucina Simpatica, which is one of the best cookbooks ever. It is a bit of an unusual mashed potato recipe in that it's a skin-on mashed red potatoes, and you leave them a little bit chunky, and you put in tons of butter and cream and salt. And that's it. And it's great with their sausages and grapes recipe, which we've talked about on the show many times.
Have you ever been to Al Forno? I mean,
yes.
I have heard you talk up this cookbook more than any other single cookbook, I think, in the history of the show. So will you tell me more about Al Forno?
Al Forno is a Italian restaurant, like a rustic Italian restaurant in Providence, Rhode Island, that has won multiple James Beard and other awards, I think. And it was founded by Joanne Killeen and the late George German. It is just inventive enough without ever going too far. So they popularized grilled pizza. They didn't literally invent grilled pizza, but if you go to a restaurant in the U.S. and get a grilled pizza, Al Forno is somewhere in the lineage of that dish.
It's so interesting to me that that a mashed potato recipe that you particularly love has come out of an Italian restaurant that popularized grilled pizza.
Yeah, but they're also like nothing about their approach is light. It's, you know, it's a very like butter and olive oil and cream. Their other signature dish that I also talk about and we've talked about on the show a bunch is baked creamy baked pastas where, you know, I think it was the Krusty Corners episode we talked about it. It's some shells or penne with cream, a lot of cream and some cheese like baked. And sometimes you dot butter on top also. It's great.
I know that there's another restaurant that is on both of our memory lanes, and that is Lark here in Seattle. Wait a minute. Does Lark exist anymore?
It does.
It does? But it moved from its
location. Yeah, they're doing like amazing takeout now.
Ooh, cool. Well, so Lark is owned by a guy named John Sundstrom. And he, from the very beginning, I mean, straight out of the gate, became well known for his mashed potatoes, which were served in a little stove, like a little tiny Dutch oven pan type thing. And these are incredibly smooth, thinner than some American mashed potatoes in texture, but incredibly smooth, incredibly buttery mashed potatoes, just off the hook mashed potatoes. And I believe that they are modeled after the famous Robuchon mashed potato.
Oh, yes.
The French chef, Joël Robuchon.
I know they are because on the menu, they're called the pommes de terre Robuchon.
Ah, okay. Well, anyway, we're going to talk more about the Robuchon potato here in a minute. I think my garage door is opening. I don't know if you heard that.
Well, there's also a leaf blower outside my place.
Wow. Wild times here.
Yeah,
in
no. It's like a nature show. Like you can hear the mating call
of the
leaf blower and the garage door opener, which are going to mate with each other.
They're trying to find each other.
What?
Anyway.
Like if a leaf blower and a garage door opener had a child, what would it be? Would it be like one thing that combined all of the best and worst aspects of a leaf blower? It would be really loud. And sometimes it would like get stuck, like going halfway up and down and just kind of clacking back and forth. These are the bad things about it. But also, also it would be really good at like cleaning up leaves and keeping your car safe, I guess.
Yeah, of all those things. Hey, I'm going to go further back on my memory lane.
Okay, please do. But we don't have to judge this hybrid creature just on like what it can do for us. You know, like what about its personality?
Ask what it can do for mankind. For our country.
Oh, yes. Is this offspring of a leaf blower and a garage door opener sufficiently patriotic? That's the question.
Maybe we'll figure it out by the end of the episode.
I think
we will. We'll come back to it.
Okay, memory lane.
So I remember as a kid, I remember my dad making garlic mashed potatoes. And he was always, I can't remember if he used a Julia Child recipe, but he always referred to them as Julia Child mashed potatoes. But he was forever changing the recipe. So I think
but
it
always
was sort
with
of like,
Julia's permission, right?
Always with Julia's permission. She was very involved.
He would get her on the phone.
All of our meal decisions at home.
Uh-huh.
My dad would call her up and be like, so I'm thinking about simmering the garlic in milk before adding the milk to the mashed potatoes. What do you think about that? And she'd be like, oh,
whoa!
That's a great
idea.
That's a great idea.
So, yeah, my dad loved to make garlic mashed potatoes. And I do remember him taking whole cloves of garlic and simmering them in a small saucepan of milk.
That sounds so homey.
I know, right? I don't know if that's how he always did it, but sometimes. Then when Brandon and I got together, Brandon started making garlic mashed potatoes. Brandon never knew my dad. I think my mom and I mentioned to Brandon that my dad had always been the mashed potato maker at Thanksgiving. So Brandon took up the mantle.
Oh, great.
And he devised his own format for mashed potatoes at Thanksgiving. And what he does, and still does it to this day, is he caramelizes a bunch of onions and some garlic and then scrapes all that stuff into a food processor with butter and makes basically this kind of, you know, it's almost like a mousse texture, but I guess it's technically a caramelized onion compound butter type thing. And then he mashes that into Yukon Gold potatoes, I believe, with the skin on.
And so the potatoes don't go into the food processor. It's just making like the flavoring compound butter.
The flavoring, yeah. So,
and he uses
a bunch of Parmesan too.
Oh, this sounds really good.
Yeah, I've never made it myself. I've only watched Brandon make it a million times. But yeah, the mashed potatoes of my childhood pretty much always had garlic in them.
I think of that as a very 80s, 90s thing. Not that it's gone away by any means, but like garlic mashed potatoes was a phrase I heard a lot at one time, more so than I do now.
People were always just like, hey, if you had garlic mashed potatoes, I mean, you'd show up for your Zoom call and the first item on the agenda would be garlic mashed potatoes.
Yeah, no, I remember that about the 90s, like a lot of very garlicky Zoom calls. I want to focus on something you said, which was that Brandon took up the mantle of mashed potato making, because that got me thinking, like, is there anything that I've ever taken up the mantle of? And for a while, I was like the main Cornish pasty maker in my house, and that was sort of like taking up the mantle of like Lori's mom's pasty making. But now Lori makes the pasties more often, so I don't know if I can really claim the mantle there. Have you ever taken up a mantle is what I'm asking?
I don't think I've taken up any mantles.
Okay.
Well,
do you have a mantle at your house?
I think I have a small mantle. Over my fireplace, there's this weird ledge that's like three bricks long, and it's off center from the fireplace.
It counts.
It's like just big enough and weird enough to, like, I don't know, put like balance a piece of kid art and a box of matches on.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you have a mantle?
I don't. We had one as a kid. At some point, like, I really got the sense that if something was really special, it would go on the mantle. And like, I was kind of into this idea. And now we don't have a mantle. And so if something is really special, it gets magneted to the fridge.
Yeah.
The like place of pride on the fridge now contains like both Iris's and my certificates of passing the Japanese fluency test.
Oh, I didn't know Iris had done it too.
Yes, Iris did a different level than I did, but we both passed.
That's so cool. Wait a minute, hold on. But the mantle that we're talking about, taking up the mantle, I mean, it's not like Brandon.
No, I think pried I refers
the
to something
off
else.
My dad's fireplace.
Oh, I hope he didn't.
I think it's more like a breastplate or like something that goes on your chest, right? That's
I think you're right. Or it could be the mantle of the earth. Because like if you took up the mantle of the earth. Oh, it is? the mantle of the earth is a bra? Or
I'm sitting here. No, I'm sitting here
what are
minding
you doing?
Like it's something that goes on your chest.
Oh, right.
I'm just rubbing my own breasts.
Yeah, like the rubbing went on much longer than necessary to make the point.
And then I started doing it and I was like, this feels nice.
Of course it does. Okay, so what was this episode about? Mantles?
Oh, mashed potatoes.
Oh, wait, so you said Brandon did not pry the mantle
off
of your father's fireplace, but imagine if he had. That is a confident move.
Yeah, okay. Imagine if that was how men, like, you know, like, sir, I've come to ask your daughter's hand or ask your permission for your daughter's hand in marriage, and then you gotta pry the mantle off the wall to show what a man you are that you can, you know, provide for.
I don't think
your
I would have succeeded in prying that mantle.
I don't think you would have either. But
wow,
your hair was very powerful. Your hair
That's
was
true.
Very powerful at the time, so don't underestimate the strength it would have given you, like Samson.
Yeah, but it turns out, like, exactly, like, all my power was in my hair, which has been gone for decades. And, like, so now I have no strength left to pry a mantle or anything else.
But you've been doing your daily yoga here.
I have been doing my daily yoga, and, like, I can still have just enough strength to mash a potato.
Oh, wow.
Which brings us back to mashed potatoes. The other mashed potato on my memory lane is the mashed potatoes found in the dish Potato Gâteau, which is from the Italian Country Table by Lynn Rossetto Casper, like her version and the one that I first encountered of this rustic Italian dish, which is like a potato pie that is based on mashed potatoes, but can have like a bunch of different things in it. Like I usually make it with fresh mozzarella and peas and sopressata, and then you put breadcrumbs on top. Very tasty.
You know, Louisa Weiss, who was the author of My Berlin Kitchen and Classic German Baking, she lives in Berlin. And in the time that we've been in lockdown, she has been posting a lot of videos in her Instagram stories of what she's been cooking for lunch and dinner.
Oh, yeah.
She's just a fantastic and very, like, unfussy cook. And it's just a pleasure to see even her most boring meal. However, she made something in early May that kind of sounds like a slightly Germanified version of this potato gâteau.
Oh, that makes sense.
It was mashed potatoes. I think it had either ham or bacon. I think it had some cheese, and it looked like it had maybe breadcrumbs on top. You could cut it into wedges. Anyway,
oh, yeah.
It looked fantastic.
This sounds very much like the same dish that probably has like seeped across borders.
Yeah, it should. It sounds like it should seep. It sounds very lovable.
It should seep.
Things that are lovable
should seep.
If you love somebody, let them seep. I knew
gross.
Where you were going there. It's disgusting. All right. Well, hold on. Can I did the research for this.
Oh, yeah.
And
please.
I want to share my knowledge, Matthew. Did you have anything
ready.
Else you want to say?
Oh, I was going to say that the, you mean for the rest of the episode? But, and then, like, I'm going to be powered down in just a moment and you're going to take it from here. Okay, great.
Yeah.
I was just going to say that when you mentioned the German version of potato pie, in the book, The Campagna Table by Mark Straussman, which is another of my favorite Italian cookbooks, he's a New York chef. He mentions that he used to work at a resort kitchen or like a hotel kitchen in the German speaking part of Switzerland, and they had a separate potato kitchen called the Kartoffelküchen. And I thought, like, this fact has stayed with me for
That's
a long time.
Incredible.
Yes, right?
It seems like something that Joël Robuchon should have had, too, because he was so famous for these potatoes. And as we'll discuss a little later, apparently it took so much work to prepare enough potatoes for the restaurant.
Yeah.
So it seems like you would need a separate kitchen
you
for
would.
It.
It wouldn't have as cool of a name in French as in German in this case, I don't think.
It would also be clunkier because potato in French is pomme de terre, like earth apple, which is the name of that song.
Earth apple, please be mine. That song?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That song.
All right, I'm going to power down now and let you mash it away.
As usual, I did most of my research on Wikipedia. And what really surprised me about researching mashed potatoes, at least on Wikipedia, is that there was so little history. Like, we have done foods that are far less common across cultures than mashed potatoes. And they'll have, like, paragraph after paragraph after paragraph of history on Wikipedia. Apparently, people feel that mashed potatoes are so ubiquitous that nobody has even cared to write the history of them on Wikipedia.
I have a theory about this. I think the more complex the preparation of the dish, the more likely it is to have recorded history. Because
this makes sense.
Yeah, because mashed potatoes, I just think, like, it's unlike a lot of things we talk about where it's like, how did someone figure out how to make an olive? You know, mashed potatoes, like, you cook the potato and then you smush it. So it's probably harder to trace the history there.
Yeah, I think I'm almost certain you're right. Well, so according to Wikipedia, recipes for mashed potatoes as a recipe started appearing in 1747 with an entry in the Art of Cookery by Hannah Glass. Bravo, Hannah Glass.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
And then potatoes in general, maybe not mashed potatoes, had their perhaps most important moment when Gollum had potatoes explained to him in the second Lord of the Rings movie, The Two Towers, when Samwise Gamgee is preparing a stew with like a rabbit or something that Gollum has brought over to the hobbitses. And you should, you know, look it up because my Gollum voice is like, my Gollum voice used to be really good and now it's bad.
Oh, no.
But, that's the opposite of good. But anyway, Gollum, like, you know, cavorts over to Samwise Gamgee and sort of looks at him as though he is maybe pulling his leg about this idea of potatoes. And he says, "What's taters, precious?"
You're right. Something has happened to your Gollum voice. I think you need to go on a quest.
What's taters, precious?
That's there better.
That was better, right?
You need to, I think you need to throw something into the crater of Mount Doom in order to get your Gollum voice back. I don't know then, what it is, but I hope it's not me.
Then Samwise Gamgee responds, "Potatoes, boil them, mash them, stick them in a stew." Do you remember that?
Oh, I haven't. I've only seen the first movie.
What?
Well, I mean, I didn't like the first movie, so I didn't see the other ones. I'm canceled now.
Was it because it was too violent for you?
No, it was because it was too long.
Oh, Matthew, it is like, so watching all three of them is a total of like 10 hours of footage.
Uh-huh.
And it's horrendously violent and very dark and so good.
Yeah, just doesn't sound like my thing.
What's taters, precious?
But I mean, I do like Gollum. If I'll watch a supercut of just all the Gollum parts. How about that?
I'm still really, I don't know what happened to my Gollum voice. Anyway, but so, okay, people
and Gollums can work together to make a great potato.
People disagree on what type of potato makes the best mashed potato.
Do they ever?
In general, what I have always heard is that floury potatoes, as opposed to waxy potatoes, make the best mashed potatoes. That floury ones tend to get fluffy, whereas waxier potatoes tend to get gummy. However, Matthew, I mean, your Al Forno recipe that you love so much is made with red-skinned potatoes, which are usually pretty waxy.
Indeed, and it's delicious. So, I don't know, maybe it is gluey and I like gluey. I've also heard that if you mash the potatoes in a food processor, they'll get gluey. I don't think I've tried that one way or the other. I just prefer the texture of a more waxy mash.
Interesting.
Like the classic mashed potato, it's one of Wife of the Show Lori's favorite things. To me, it's kind of too plain. And like a waxy potato just has more textural interest and like kind of traps the butter in a different way.
That's interesting. I don't think I've ever had mashed potatoes made from red-skinned potatoes, or at least not in a very long time. So I usually tend to use Yukon Gold potatoes, which I think of as another thing that like stormed the scene in the 90s.
They did storm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that. They stormed the castle.
They pried the mantle off the wall. They said, "We're the potato for mashed potatoes now."
Yep.
But some people swear by using baking potatoes or russet potatoes. Anyway, then, you know, we get into a whole lot of disagreement about what is the right way to cook them. Do you peel them first? Do you peel them after? Do you cut them into cubes? Do you boil them whole? Matthew, take it away.
Okay. Because the skins are going into the Al Forno mashed potatoes recipe, obviously they'll be cooked with the skins on, but I believe quartered first, or like cut into chunks first so they cook faster.
Do you start them in cold water when you're boiling them?
Let me grab the cookbook because I do not remember.
Grab it.
Place the potatoes in a saucepan, adding enough water to cover them by 1 inch. Bring to a boil, lower the heat, and simmer until the potatoes are soft, about 15 minutes. So they start in cold water.
And I have read that it, almost across the board, every mashed potato recipe that I have seen recommends starting in cold, salted water. Because if you drop potatoes into boiling water, the outside
It
splashes on you, for one thing. But also, you can imagine the outer layer of the potato. If you're thinking of the potato as the earth with a crust and a mantle and a core.
Throwing
back to the earth's mantle thing.
Oh, yeah,
right?
No, definitely. And they have a liquid core made of like molten iron.
Yes, that's what's in every potato.
Yep.
Anyway, you can imagine if you drop a potato into boiling water, the outside is going to start cooking right away and is going to get overcooked by the time the heat reaches the inside and cooks the very middle. This is the theory.
I think we would really have to defer to friend of the show, Kenji Lopez, all on that question, because it seems like he's probably already investigated this.
Oh, God, I wish I had thought to look up any of his recipes or look in Food Lab, his book.
Yeah, I'm sure he has some thoughts. We can link.
But yeah, I always, no matter what I'm cooking, if I'm boiling potatoes, I always start them in cold, salted water.
When you think about the Earth's crust, do you ever consider or worry, as I do, that if there were like a space Godzilla, that the space Godzilla would find the Earth's crust really delectable, like the way we like things with a crispy shell?
No.
Like maybe we should call it something else so as not to attract space Godzillas, is what I'm saying.
Well, I think if we just call it crust, and if we don't, you know, if we don't overdo it and start calling it like Oreo cookie crust or shortbread crust or whatever, it's fine.
Or crispy and fried earth.
Yeah, crispy fried earth.
Right. Okay.
Anyway, okay, Matthew. So you got your potatoes. You boil them in cold water.
Yeah, so apparently that is what I do.
Did you say yours are peeled or not?
Not peeled, except for the potato gâteau recipe. They are peeled, and those get cooked whole. I think also starting in cold water, but then cooked longer because they're cooked whole. And I use Yukon Golds for that recipe. And then you peel them as soon as you can after cooking them, which is... There should be some expression for something that is as hot to the touch as a potato that's just been cooked.
Should it be a hot potato?
No, not that. Like a...
You know what? I think that we should
Fiery tuber.
I think that we should make a children's game.
Okay.
Based on how hot potatoes are when you're trying to handle them and peel them. And we should call this game Hot Potato.
That's one idea. What if
we should have children sit around and play it. Tossing an object from one person to the next.
It sounds like you'd want to burn a bunch of children. What's wrong with you?
Haven't you ever played Hot Potato?
Yeah, I'm doing a bit.
Oh, good. Okay. Okay. I think we should have a children's game. Yes, and me. Come on here.
I think we should have a children's game based on the concept of space Godzillas chewing on the earth.
Oh, that sounds like a lot of fun.
It does. Yes, I play Hot Potato. Yeah, that's true. I've also played telephone. There was a time when I was a kid when like getting to play telephone with like a big circle of kids was as fun could get.
Do you know what was never fun though?
What?
Being in a situation where you had to do that icebreaker game of passing an orange from like underneath your chin.
Oh, that's terrible.
Underneath somebody else's chin. That never was not nerve-breaking.
It was very nerve-breaking. I broke several nerves.
I hope we never have to do that again in the post-coronavirus era.
That's a good point.
Is outlawed.
Is this something that came up for you a lot, like in the last few years?
No, I was just thinking of games that used to happen when you would sit in a circle.
Right. That's fair.
There were seances. There were Ouija boards. There were icebreaker games with oranges. There was hot potato.
I was going to say duck, duck, goose, and you went straight to seances.
Musical chairs.
There are three spirits who want to talk to you. Two of them are ducks, and we're not yet sure about the third one.
Okay. All right. Okay.
I think the seance is going really well so far.
So wait, Matthew. Okay. Yeah. So you've got your potatoes cooked. They're peeled or not peeled, depending on what recipe it is. Now, how do you turn them into mash? Do you use a potato mashing device? Do you use a ricer? Do you use a food mill? Tell me, what do you do?
I am so glad you asked, because I use a potato mashing device, which it's specifically in this case a potato masher, the kind that has like the kind of radiator shaped metal
squiggle. Yeah.
I find that works absolutely fine. You know what that is also great for? And I think this is a tip that I got from Cooks Illustrated many years ago. So like if you put some ground meat into a pan and you want to break it up into little bits, potato masher works great for this.
Nice.
We do have a food mill. I think I use it about once every 2 years for like grinding canned tomatoes sometimes. I don't even know what else. But it's hanging up there in the kitchen.
I have a food mill and I have a ricer. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever used the ricer. I think I used my food mill for the first time in the last year, and I just felt like cleaning it was pretty not fun.
What'd you mill?
I don't remember what I milled. It might have been like applesauce or something like that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I have a potato mashing device, also called a potato masher. And I agree, like that works just fine for me. But I think that if I wanted really, really smooth mashed potatoes, like a French pomme purée kind of situation, I would want to use a ricer because that's going to give the finest, smoothest texture.
Yeah. You want to hear something weird? Not only did we used to have a ricer, but I believe there was a time when we had two ricers, one of them with interchangeable discs.
Wow.
We no longer have any potato ricer. I don't know what happened to them. I assume they got thrown into Mount Doom. And
I think
I have not missed them.
I think a writer,
potato writer.
let's talk about writers. Well, this is something we might actually know a thing or two about,
writers,
as opposed to mashed
words.
Potatoes, which, yeah. I think that a ricer, I'm kind of inclined to dig mine out. I think it's at the back of, I have this cabinet under the counter that's in the corner.
Oh,
do you have
that's
one of
where,
these?
You make Harry Potter sleep.
It's where I make Harry Potter sleep. No, it's where all the cooking appliances and devices that I don't use, they all gather there.
Oh, sure. Yes.
And they hang out there for years. Anyway, that's where my food mill lives. And I think I have a ricer back there. And I'm kind of curious to get it out because now that I think about it, ricing potatoes sounds really smart.
It does. Yeah. And I think it's very satisfying too because it's just like a big garlic press.
Did Iris ever have one of those Play-Doh kits where they would make like
with the
hair
extruder
to put on?
Yeah.
Yeah, with an extruder.
I don't remember whether Iris had that or not, but I did when I was a kid.
No, I love that kind of stuff. I'm going to look for my ricer when we're done with this episode.
Yeah, like use it for potatoes, use it for Play-Doh.
Yeah. Anyway, so Matthew, what do you put in your mashed potatoes and what order do you put the flavorings or the fats in?
Okay, so I think the butter goes in first because it's going to need a little time to melt, and then the cream or milk shortly thereafter. And I think it's fine for the salt to go in anytime.
Mm-hmm. I've only made mashed potatoes actually a few times. Like, we tend to be a roasted potato household.
Yeah, same here.
But I have used butter and milk. I don't know if I've ever made mashed potatoes with cream.
It's very tasty.
Awesome. Okay, I want to talk about the Robuchon potatoes. So there are several different versions. If you look these up, you can find different recipes claiming to be Robuchon potatoes. But the most famous ones attributed to Joël Robuchon have a 2-to-1 potato to butter ratio. So, like, for every pound of potato, you've got half a pound of butter.
Wow.
Like, it doesn't take that many potatoes to make a pound, right? And then you think about 2 sticks of butter.
Yeah, I'm thinking about
That's so cool. So apparently, by the way, Robuchon is no longer alive, but apparently there is some sort of legend of, or there's a video out there.
That his spirit roams the pastures of France, just like putting butter in stuff.
Yeah. I was going to say that he is the patron saint of buttery mashed potatoes, and he flies over people's houses and drops more butter into their mashed potatoes.
That makes sense.
There's
down
apparently
the chimney.
A video of him somewhere in his kitchen hassling some poor low on the ladder cook who is ferociously whisking some potatoes, and Robuchon is saying, "Encore du beurre, du beurre, du beurre," like more butter, more butter, more butter.
Oh, but like then you just know that there's going to be a point where the underling puts in one pat of butter too many, and then Robuchon is going to just lose his
shit. Moins du beurre, du beurre.
But you can't do that. You can't suck butter out of mashed potatoes.
True. Well, so here's what's interesting, and I think I've heard of this elsewhere. So he has you boil the potatoes with the skins on, then you peel them when they're still hot. You also play the game hot potato at this point. Then he has you rice them to get that really fine texture. And then he has you put the riced potatoes in a pan over the heat and stir them to sort of dry them out and make them fluffier.
Yes, I have heard of this.
Yeah.
Have I done it? I don't think so.
Anyway, then he has you add the butter, diced butter that must be cold. Interesting, right?
Yeah, although like that's a big thing in French cooking. I think like a monté au beurre with cold butter so that
yes.
it emulsifies better, maybe. I don't know. I don't know what the deal there is.
Yeah. Anyway, I believe you do this, you know, still on the heat, and then you've heated up the milk, and the milk goes in hot. So cold butter first, then milk, and then you whisk the mixture a bit to lighten it before serving it.
Yeah, I've never made it, but I have had it a number of times at Lark in Seattle, and it's a good recipe.
When you make mashed potatoes, well, I think I know the answer to this because we talked about the Al Forno potatoes, but
let's do like newlywed game style and see if you know the answer.
Do you want them chunky, or do you want, like, how do you feel when you find an unmashed bit of potato in your mashed potatoes?
I feel fine about it. I don't like actively shoot for chunky, but like I want them to have a little texture. Like unless, like I do, you know, if I'm going to Lark and they're going to make me the Robuchon, like super, super smooth, soft potato puree, great. I'm down with that. But if I'm making like a rustic Al Forno style mash at home, I don't want it to be perfectly smooth.
Do you think that smooth mashed potatoes should be one dish and chunky should have a different name? Like on Wikipedia, they suggested that a chunky version of this dish should be called smashed potatoes.
Now, I think of smashed potatoes as being like a heavily flavored chunky mashed potato.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I don't think of it as smashed potatoes unless it has, like, you know, like cheddar and chives and bacon in it or something like that.
Oh, God. I would have never thought of that. That's so interesting. I mean, not interesting at all, really.
This is the most interesting segment of our show. It's like, what stuff, like ask names, throw out some other food
what
words. I'll tell you what they designate
right.
to me.
I can't think of anything.
Just the name of any dish.
Elbow macaroni.
That is a whole roasted fish. Topped with scallions and ginger, and then you pour some oil over it, and it kind of sizzles.
Okay. Chicken noodle soup.
Chicken noodle soup is a flatbread that is originally from Central Asia, and you cook it over like a hot stone.
Oh, it's
and,
that one that's got scallions in it.
No, you sprinkle it. That's a different one. What you're thinking of? A Snickers bar is the thing you're thinking of. this one has sesame seeds. Chicken noodle soup. Okay.
This is our dumbest segment
yet. This is our dumbest bit we've ever done.
Okay,
congratulations.
Wait. All right, Matthew, hold on. I want to turn our mashed potato discussion away from,
you're gonna turn me
from
off again?
Actual like okay. fresh potatoes. I'm going to power you down.
Okay,
Matthew, have you ever made instant mashed potatoes?
I can't answer that. I am powered down. You have to wake me up again. You have to say, hey Siri.
Hey Siri, have you ever made instant mashed potatoes?
I found information on instant mashed potatoes at potato.org. I don't think I've ever made the instant mashed potatoes. Like I walk by them in the supermarket sometimes.
I love that you said the instant mashed potatoes. I've never made the instant.
I think my brain was thinking the instant pot.
Oh. Okay.
I know I've eaten the instant mashed potatoes. I'm just gonna go lean into it, like in an institutional context, like at a college dorm, that sort of thing.
Oh, but, yeah, I think we all have without realizing that they were the instant mashed potatoes.
Can we call our band the Instant Mashed Potatoes?
Let's do.
Like
I want
a pop band. I love it. Have you made the instant mashed potatoes at home?
I never have.
What are they called? It's like potato buds? Is that one
yes.
of the brands? Yes.
Yes.
Love that name.
It's never occurred to me to buy a box of instant mashed potatoes, although it does seem like really good lockdown food.
It does.
I notice, again, to you know, nod in Louisa Weiss's direction, I have seen her in her Instagram stories using boxed instant mashed potatoes.
No, I don't have any problem with it.
No, I mean, I'm sure I've eaten them many times and thoroughly enjoyed them. But
yeah.
It's interesting. Usually, when we buy them at the grocery store, they usually apparently come in the form of flakes.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when you buy them in like huge quantities for like an institutional setting or whatever, they come in granules.
That is interesting.
Isn't that the Really? I know, it's so exciting. Okay. All right, Matthew, let's wrap this thing up by talking a little bit about some serving suggestions.
Okay,
in case
I'm excited.
Don't know what
for
to
this.
Do with their mashed potatoes.
Bangers and mash. Love it.
So this is the bangers being sausages.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Cole Cannon.
We made this on our St. Patrick's Day episode, which I think was in 2010.
It's delicious. I remember when we made it thinking, this is great. I'm going to make this more often and I've never made it again.
Is it with scallions?
Is mashed potatoes with cabbage? Leeks? Clearly, we don't
that
remember
makes sense.
Anything.
All right, great. Bubble and Squeak. So you wrote a description of Bubble and Squeak, which sounds really good. I don't know if I've ever eaten it. It's one of these dishes where the name is so entertaining that I forget what the dish is.
I had to look it up. The idea of it is that you take whatever vegetables and meat is left over from your your Sunday roast, if you're in the UK and you're doing a Sunday roast.
Like you've roasted a joint.
You've roasted a joint, yes, and then you smoked it. You take your cold mashed potatoes, whatever veggies are left over, whatever meat, and you pan fry it. And bubble and squeak, of course, refers to the sound that the various meats and or the veggies make.
Yeah, because this England is really where this type of dish happens. Like with dishes with names that are so funny that I can't remember what the dish is. Because spotted dick, I know it's a dessert, but I don't know what's in it. Toad in the hole. I know you take a sausage and you drop it into something, but I'm not sure what. I think probably the crater of Mount Doom, but I haven't looked it up. That's all I can think of. Bedfordshire clanger. Don't know what it is.
I think I know the answer to this, but I want to hear it from you. Do you like your mashed potatoes with gravy?
Not a big gravy person.
I was going to guess that based on your condiment aversion.
I don't ketchup. I just don't want anywhere near me. Gravy, I don't have a problem with it. It's just not something that I get excited about. Again, I've already been canceled because of what I said about the Lord of the Rings. And so I'm just going to the gravy thing's not going to make it any worse.
No, it's not. I don't really understand gravy. And I've eaten lots of different people's gravy.
I bet.
Put notches on my bedpost every time
I
eat
people
somebody's
gravy. People who were gravy.
Seeping gravy? Yeah. I've eaten lots of different gravies, and I think I just don't care.
Yeah.
I just don't want gravy, and I think that good mashed potatoes are so good that, I just don't want to screw around with anything.
Okay, let's move ahead to something I do like. Mashed potatoes as a topping for shepherd's pie or cottage pie. This is not a dish that I eat often, but every time I do, I'm like, oh, this is great.
I think we've talked about shepherd's pie or cottage pie on the show before, and I've mentioned the mother of my childhood friend Jennifer. Her mother was Linda Pascal, the one who always had a box of Franzia wine in the fridge, and who had
those big...
Is she
the one who
big...
now lives in Paradise Coast, Florida, or something like that?
She lives in Naples, Florida.
Okay.
Anyway, Linda is a fantastic cook, and one of the things that I always think of her making from my childhood was shepherd's pie, and I remember eating it at their house and begging my mother to make it, and it never happened. But shepherd's pie, so good, but it's one of those things that has not made it into my rotation.
Yeah,
it
okay, should. I'm gonna make a shepherd's pie sometime in the next month. That's my pledge to you. I'm going to write it down right here.
And then, of course, mashed potatoes get used in other things you have to mash potatoes to make gnocchi. They sometimes go in different cultures, potato dumplings.
Oh yeah, pierogi, potato pierogi, that's mashed potatoes in there, right? Those are great.
Basically, I think.
Gnocchi, have we done a gnocchi episode? We probably have, right?
No, I'm almost certain we haven't.
Okay, well then let's put that on the list.
Great, okay, cool.
I love gnocchi. Okay.
Okay.
All right, that's it. We can power this one down. You can find us online at spilledmilkpodcast.com and facebook.com/spilledmilkpodcast, Instagram at spilledmilkpodcast. Our producer is Abby Circatella. Don't forget to go subscribe to our brand new show, Dire Desires. Just go to diredesirespodcast.com.
Seriously, we think you guys are going to love it. We had so much fun doing this show. Go listen and let us know what you think.
Please do. And until next time, thank you for listening to Spilled Milk. We're your potato buds.
I'm Molly Weisenberg.
And I'm Matthew Amster Burton. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Looking things up in a cookbook on the show.
Doopy 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 doop boop boop ba doopy doop doop doop.